Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and we are pulsating through the airways thanks to OldFootballShirts.com. Well, the international break feels like it's been an age, but we're finally back in action. It feels so long, in fact, that we're even excited about the prospect of facing Burnley.
Are we?
So, our cast of internationals have returned mostly in one piece, but the extent of Leandro Trossard's hamstring injury remains a concern, and it looks like we might be out for a little bit longer than anticipated. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we're delighted to welcome back Justin Brintnell. Hello, Justin.
Hello, mate.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
When you say everybody, I mean, you mean listener.
Yeah. You too as well. I appreciate it.
I like the fact that he actually made it sound as if he was a kids' TV presenter. So, hello, everybody. Today we're going through the round window.
I don't know who's creeping me out more at the moment, him or you.
Hi, Justin. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
How's your season started, mate?
So I managed to sort of watch a bit of the Watford game, and it just blew me away, the football. I couldn't believe what team I was watching.
Actually the same team as last year.
Yeah.
well, there is that.
So that was extraordinary and filled me with capacious amounts of optimism.
That's a stupid place to go, isn't it?
and then we played very well against West Ham, obviously. Mm. Didn't take the chances. And then Southampton, oh, Andoni, why did you do that? And then City kind of we all saw coming, and it wasn't a surprise, but hey, I believe we almost matched them in possession stats. So.
Well, that's not so shabby, is it?
Well, I've revisited that game now because there was a brilliant report about Vincent Kompany's testimonial on the BBC website this week that basically said that we won 4-0. So that's good. Yeah.
Fantastic. And how Vincent Kompany was that testimonial that he was actually injured for his own testimonial? That's about as Vincent Kompany as you could get, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've got a colleague from work who actually went as well, just because he wanted to say goodbye to Big Vinny.
Vinny, do they really call him Vinny?
I've got no idea. I hope not. But I can appreciate him as a footballer.
Absolutely.
I think he was a wonderful servant to them. And,
we've said it before on this show, and it was top trolling for that game at the end of game last season. Sorry, the game at the end of last season. Bruno gets a standing ovation from the entire crowd, including the Man City fans. Vincent Kompany gets a standing ovation from the entire crowd, including the home fans. Kyle Walker doesn't. I think you're quite right. It's how highly he is regarded across football. Absolutely. So it's all a little bit different, isn't it?
Very, very different. Very, very, very exciting. But I do have a feeling that this Burnley game could be kind of almost like an early season barometer of was the Watford sort of a bit of a one-off, or can we play like this and actually generally get results? Because until you got the 3 points in the bag, then it doesn't really matter how well you play.
Are you worried by the fact that Watford have already changed their manager then? And it was like basically they're that bad that you're so bad you lost to Brighton, we're going to change the manager.
I'm not too concerned about that because I just think it's par for the course for Watford. They change their manager every 8 to 10 months.
You look at the calendar and you think, right, time for another change, lads. Yeah.
I think that's normal for them. It's more to do, I don't know, I want to see us play well again and get the points. That's my desire at the moment.
I mean, clearly finishing is an issue at the moment. It's 3 league games in a row we haven't scored. And we could have scored against West Ham, should have scored against West Ham, should have got something against Southampton, or at very least scored a goal.
Throw in the back of the net. It's just that VAR disallowed it.
Well, yeah. Mm. And would the linesman have done it? That's so contentious. But the fact that the linesman didn't stick his flag up does not mean to say that he wouldn't have done if not instructed otherwise.
Well, linesmen are a thing of the past, it seems.
They serve a purpose. Of course they do. It's when it gets the contentious stuff that their flag is basically there for decoration or to point to a corner flag, and that's about it.
Well, I went to a game midweek, and the linesmen were great.
Which game was this then?
This was the.
We went to Worthing against Hastings.
It was Cup Fever. Yeah, brilliant.
First qualifying round.
It was. Yes.
Okay. What was the score? What happened? Do tell.
I'm taking all the credit for this because Worthing were 2-0 down when I got there, and they won 3-2 after extra time.
So. Has there been a Worthing game? I just want to explain something here. That when Brighton aren't at home, there's a few times when myself and sometimes AD and our good friend Andy Bass and the sponsor of the show Phil Shelley, we pop along and go and watch Worthing play. And incidentally, it's not a fiver for Albion season ticket holders anymore. It's now £8. I think they realised that too many Albion season ticket holders went along and they weren't getting their money in. So there's that. But every single time we've been to Worthing, you turn up at half time, AD.
Yeah, that's because I've got a life.
And the rest of us don't?
Well, yeah.
Actually, now I think about it, the rest of us don't have kids, do we?
Justin does, yeah, but none of you do. No,
that's what I mean. Those that go along to Worthing, and there's a few of us, you know, you're missing out on the Brookstead bit, you're missing out on the beers at the ground. I mean, there was the time when we actually missed out on all getting sunburnt, or you missed out on getting sunburnt, and that is quite a Swan Vesta look you'll have by the time you get sunburnt.
A cross between a strawberry chapa chug and a Belisha Beacon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, Al, you've been busy this week.
I have. Well, it's the Albion women, they kick off their home league programme. They're playing Chelsea this weekend, and I went along to the press conference. You'll hear presently from Albion's Ireland international, Megan Connolly. What a chatterbox she is. But first, let's hear from Albion manager Hope Powell.
Pleased that we didn't lose, but disappointed we didn't win, because I think we had enough possession, ball play to win the game. We just couldn't convert. So, but I'm pleased with the point, 100% improvement on the opening game last season. So, yeah, good start. But we could have won the game.
Things to work on this week,
Oh, definitely. And the fact that we play Chelsea, which will be a different proposition altogether. Yeah, lots to work on. But essentially, you know, off to a good start, I think. It's tough for most teams playing against, you know, Chelsea, Man City, Arsenal. We recognise it's a big task. The expectation is for them to win the game. We know that. We recognise probably they'll have more ball possession than we will. So we're just going to try and work on the things that we're good at. You know, we have to be at our best defensively and hope that going forward we can try and create and execute better, try to finish and see what comes of it.
How encouraging were the crowds last weekend, not just for the Brighton-Bristol game, but across the board in WSL?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I think, you know, certainly there was a lot of momentum after the World Cup. I think the challenge now is can it be sustainable? But I think the initial response, certainly even at Brighton, we've had over 500 season tickets sold before a ball was kicked, so that's brilliant. So that momentum certainly carried through. It's about sustaining it, as I said, but really, really encouraging. We just want those fans across the country to come and support the women's game week in, week out. I think there is still sort of the top three, as we know it, or possibly the top four. We've now Man United, given their recruitment and you know the brand that they have, will always attract top quality. But I think the games will be more competitive because being full-time athletes now certainly makes it challenging for all teams. But you're still going to have that sort of core three that you know are full of international players. That I think there's still a league within a league, if you know what I mean. But that being said, I think, you know, the fact that all the teams are full-time, the experience of being in a full-time programme, certainly for Brighton, you kind of know what's ahead of you and you prepare better, you're in better physical condition, et cetera, makes it that much more competitive. So I think the league will probably be more competitive than it's ever been, generally for most, but I still think that there's a top three that are slightly ahead of everybody else at the moment.
And do you feel this is? I know you said you're disappointed not to get that win against Bristol. Mm. And, you know, looking at the form of both sides, really, Brighton were the better side at the weekend.
I think so.
But do you feel that that your side has started the season much fitter, much stronger this time compared to this time?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think you know the admission of the girls. You know, they last season you're unsure. It's new territory, and it took them probably until around Christmas until they actually got to grips with the league by their own admission, you know. So they're in a better place. We worked really hard over the summer, second season being a full-time professional. They know what the expectations are, so they're better prepared for it, not just physically but mentally as well. So we appreciate it won't be easy. It's going to be a really tough season, but at least, you know, they know what to expect and they probably can manage themselves a little bit better than they did last season. But, you know, more importantly, we've got to score goals and get points on the board to stay in the league.
This time last year, you said that your first target and ambition for the team was to stay in the Premier, in the WSL, in the top division. In speaking to Amy last week, she said that, you know, it's obviously the same as you, obviously, but she's looking for an improvement. So with that in mind, what the area specifically you're looking for an improvement on last year?
I think we're, you know, not conceding as many goals. You know, hence we've recruited a goalkeeper, Yeovil goalkeeper Megan Walsh, who did very well last season. We're looking to improve in the way we play, you know, more progressive, more aggressive at times, depending on who we're playing against. And certainly we want to try and finish higher up the table than we did last season. And that's the ambition of the players and that's the ambition of the club. Yeah, it's building. It's building on what we did last year, the players we had last year. We've brought some new players in. And it's about putting those building blocks in place and making sure that the infrastructure is secure and solid. And it's something, a foundation from which we can build. And that was always the plan. The players set the targets, the ambitions. I'm not going to tell you what they are, but it's definitely to try and improve on next year in terms of the league standing. While we recognise it's going to be tough, you know.
Obviously, the Albion are playing at home games at Crawley. Do you feel that's actually adding an extra? Is it adding an extra pressure? I mean, would your preference be that, you know, the team plays back in Brighton here specifically?
I think in an ideal world, yes, but there's certain criteria that needs to be met in order to be a WSL one club, and Crawley in terms of a stadia meet those requirements. Now again, that's not my domain. I must say that playing at Crawley, the club have been brilliant. The ground in particular, it's a really good surface. You know, it's a nice stadia, I think, for what we want. So I'm not going to complain about that, but yes, you know, does it mean we miss out on a lot of fans that probably won't travel to Crawley? In all honesty, I don't know. But the fact that 500, you know, season tickets have been sold is I think, a compliment to the club and a compliment to Crawley.
And to what extent is the World Cup? And obviously, then the European Championships coming here in a couple of years' time. It's obviously making a big, it's a statement of English football and football in Brighton making. Do you agree that the whole World Cup has done so much good for the women's game?
Yeah, I think you've got to give credit to, I think, the BBC, you know, those that are prepared to broadcast women's football. And I think the viewing figures shows that there's an appetite for it, not just in everywhere in the country at the moment. I think, as I said before, we need that appetite to continue. We need fans to come out and watch the games. We need broadcasters to broadcast the games, et cetera, et cetera. So what happened in the World Cup has had a massive positive knock-on effect to women's football globally, but we need it to continue.
Firstly, last weekend, the attendances. 3,000
yeah.
Your game, the City game, the main night derby.
Yeah.
What do you make of that opening?
I think it's very positive for everyone in the league. I think it's coming off the World Cup, there's a lot of talk saying, oh, we're going to get big crowds, but then to actually see it was just really good to see. But hopefully it's not just the first game of the season and it's not just in the big stadiums, that people can come out to Crawley and then people can come to other games and the attendances will be just as big, hopefully.
How do you encourage that?
I think it's kind of... You could say it's to do with the media as well, kind of getting the coverage so people can see it, you know, so people can see, all right, like it's on TV, like I want to go watch a game. I want to be there and be present. But I think it's just the entertainment as well. I think every team in this league is getting better and better and better. So I think it's kind of people want to see it. It's not just a case of, oh, we're just going to put on TV for the sake of it. It's good games. You see the goals that were on TV and you're like, all right, I want to be there and I want to watch it.
What was it like playing here in the Arsenal game?
Yeah, yeah, no, that was, it was pretty cool. Yeah, it was pretty cool because obviously we watch the men's game a lot here, so it's nice to kind of be on the field. It's a big pitch. But no, it was good to see the crowds. Obviously that day we had broke the attendance. Obviously recently it's been broke a little higher than 5,000. But no, it was really good to kind of be in that atmosphere, and hopefully we can get more this season and get another chance to play here, and hopefully get a win on this pitch.
How much is it the World Cup factor or just the growth of the game or both?
I think it's both. I think personally for me, I'm a massive fan of the game. So for me watching the World Cup, I was like, wow, like I love women's football. Like I want to watch it more. Like I want to go watch other games in the league. Like I want to watch players because some of the players in the league I look up to. Like I want to, and the chance to play against them is like amazing. So I think it's both the World Cup coming off that has really kind of, I think, pushed it. And I think a lot of people are making the effort, as I said, to put it on TV and let people see it.
You have 4 years in America. The Americans won the World Cup, of course.
Yeah.
They've done it right for two decades plus.
Yeah.
What do they do differently? I know you're now fully professional here.
Yeah.
Is it that sort of stuff or is it more?
It's a lot different in America. I think when you watch the World Cup, you see the Americans are just athletes. Like, they were going for 90 plus. At the end of the 90 minutes, they could go for another game. You could see it. And I think that's a big thing I took from America was their fitness base helped them on the pitch as well, play. And I think the Americans are really kind of that, not one step ahead, but I think they're putting a lot into their national team. I think they're in a lot more than other national teams would be. Even myself with the Irish team, like, we're not in that often. When you look at the US team, they're in for 3-4 weeks at a time, and they're together, and they're kind of a club team in a way. So I think for them, they kind of set the standard at the World Cup. I think a lot of teams are kind of pushing against them, but I think they kind of set the standard fitness-wise and kind of how to play.
As for the Albion, of course, an opening draw,
yeah.
Chelsea this weekend.
Yeah.
Exciting. Worried?
I think for me it's exciting. I think we're going to go into a lot of the games this season as the underdog. And I think for me personally, I love that. I think, you know, you've nothing to lose. You're going out against Chelsea, who are going to be pushing for the title. And I think this is our opportunity to kind of test ourselves against one of the best teams in the league. And I think we can get a result from them. I think you can get a result from anyone if you just go out there, play your game. And it's more so who wants to win. You know, it's the desire to win that's kind of going to get you the result. For me, yeah, it's exciting. I think last week, I think everyone in the team was kind of disappointed we couldn't get the win. I think we felt throughout the whole preseason we were building up to it. I think we were pushing for that because we felt, all right, we're good enough, we can do this. So I think coming off that, we're going into this game with confidence, we can play and just, you know, take it to Chelsea. As I said, they're one of the best teams. So first of all, you can't kind of get ahead of yourself. You can't think, oh my God, we're going to take it to him, we're going to this and that. You just got to, we have to play our own game. You know, we've gone through this whole week doing our tactics. We have to set up the way we've trained. And it's just a case of being switched on for 90 plus minutes. Because I think Chelsea are a team where if you switch off for 1 second, it's, you know, they're on the counter attack and they're in there. So I think for us as a team, it's important that we, from the beginning, just believe we can do it. And just for the full 90 plus minutes, stay switched on and just have each other's back the whole time.
You've had international experience. Do you think that helps when you're playing against a side like Chelsea where there are a number of international players in there?
Yeah, yeah. I think for me personally, I'm excited for it. You know, I'm not kind of worried or scared or, you know, I'm excited to kind of test yourself against the best, you know, test yourself against players that you probably have faced in international. And I think that's why you play. You know, you play because you want to test yourself and play against the best, and that's going to make you better, and that's going to make us better as a team, facing the likes of Chelsea and the bigger teams in this league. And I think if we want to really push to finish high this season, we have to, and I think facing Chelsea early in the season is going to test us as well, see where we are 2 games into the league.
What are your personal ambitions for this coming season?
As a team, we want to finish high in the league. I think we want to kind of develop and be a team where people come in here and think, all right, it's going to be tough to get a result here, you know, because they're going to look at us and think, all right, they're after improving a lot. I think personally for me, I just want to kind of improve my game to help the team. I think for me, I only came here in January. And I think I'm still kind of finding my feet in a way. So I think I want to kind of help this team as much as I can.
So someone who's only been here for less than a year.
Yeah.
The city.
Oh, I love her. Honestly, I really do love her. I think anything goes in this city. I learned this quite quick. Anything goes. Literally, like... I would just be like, I'd be sitting at like this coffee place, like people watching, you're sitting there, and the people that walk past, like honestly, as I said, anything goes. You know, you can kind of picture it yourself. It's like, it's from one extreme to the other, you know, and it's just like, no one bats an eyelid. It's just like, you know, carry on with your day, do what you want to do. Like, no one cares in a way, you know, you live your life, I live my life. Like, no one really kind of... It's great to see, but it's like, you know, it's refreshing.
And that was Ireland international Megan Connolly saying how much she loves this city. Anything goes. Actually, when she said that, you could see her really fighting with wanting to say something really, not disparaging, but when she said anything goes, what she really meant was, this place is mad, but in a good way. So she joined in January and has really settled into life and culture in the city. And let's face it, Justin, it's kind of a potty city we live in, isn't it?
Yeah, it's cosmopolitan.
Is that the one? Yes. Yes. It's something to begin with C anyway.
Well, I mean, I did an interview with the Burnley show this week, and they asked me what I thought of Graham Potter. And I said, well, Brighton's a modern forward-thinking kind of place.
Wow.
And we've got a modern forward-thinking kind of manager.
Do you think that actually struck home? Did that actually sort of, you know, get to... Did they get that?
I'm just going to leave that hanging.
No, okay, fair enough.
They did ask me what I thought of Burnley as well, but I'm not going
to
go.
No, please don't. No, so good luck to the Albion women. They're playing Chelsea. They're going to need a lot of luck. But the great thing is, as Hope Powell said during that interview, was that we've sold 500 season tickets, which is five times more than they had last season. It is still an anathema that we're playing at Crawley. It's the furthest away that any team is, certainly in the Women's Super League, is playing their home games. There's going to be a couple of games this season where they're going to play at the Amex. That's brilliant, and we need that. Even if we can only a third fill it, if we can a third fill it, that would be brilliant. But playing at Crawley, yeah, it's nice to have a couple of thousand. That would be brilliant at Crawley, and the place will look busy.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, obviously, I understand the reasons why they've got to go to Crawley, because of the rule changes and the fact they've got to play on grass, and they've got to have a stadium that's got to have a minimum capacity of 6,000.
So, yes.
But the thing is, it was when all the time they were playing at Lancing, it was beginning to grow naturally, and the figures.
It's an ironic here thing, yeah. Is that it was a plastic pitch, and yet the fan base is growing organically, absolutely. And I can't help feeling that the Women's Super League came in one season too early for us. It was growing, and there was a couple of games when there was over 1,000 people when Manchester City came down, and it was superb.
1,300, though.
It was brilliant, and that place was really heaving at the time. But to play at Crawley, even to get 1,300 at Crawley would be brilliant, but it's going to be so tricky. I'll give you another for instance. In the international break in mid-November, I think the WSL are going to try and promote Women's Football
Day.
They're
kind of trying to do it like a non-league day.
Like a non-league day. And we're due to be playing at Crawley that day against Birmingham City. Surely that's the perfect opportunity for us to be playing at the Amex that day. Move the game to the Amex. Hopefully they will.
I suspect that they will be playing a game at the Amex, but it won't be that one. They want one of the big London clubs
I think any opportunity to do so, because we looked at the fixtures. The men's team aren't playing after November the 2nd, because we're talking about November the 16th, 17th here. They're not playing till after the 2nd, and then the next game isn't until the following week. The pitch will cope. So everything points to the fact that they really ought to. I think it's just the fact they haven't looked at it or discussed it. It might be only, inverted commas, Birmingham City, but I think there's plenty of scope to play. And if they play four or five games there, so long as it doesn't affect the pitch, I think it's perfectly all right. So, you know, let's see it happen, because getting to Crawley is a pain.
Okay. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and on our podcast. We're pretty much everywhere. You can now get the podcast on Spotify.
Do you reckon they can get it on the International Space Station? Wouldn't that be cool?
I suspect they can. But, and you know what
they want to?
You know what they can also get?
What can they get?
Oldfootballshirts.com.
Brilliant.
And I'm just going to pass this over to Justin.
Oh,
I like this.
That's
actually
a minger.
Ooh. I actually like this. Can you describe it for me?
Heidi loves it, I hate it. Justin, where do you stand on this?
So
describe it.
I think I quite like it, actually. It's a blue shirt, a reasonably dark blue, and across the shirt there are kind of white kind of fuzzy lines, like a wave, zigzags, aren't they? But not regular
electrical charges.
The shirt is made by Umbro, and the sponsor is Stenaline.
And the badge has been photoshopped out, which is fair.
Which is good. It kind of says 80s to me.
It does very much say 80s all over it. The thing is, actually, it says Stenaline, which means for once, just for once, it's not a Mexican shirt. But also, Phil does like to fish out an away shirt that's blue. So it's a team that's probably usually plays in red or yellow or something like that. Stenaline is a kind of, isn't that the kind of Norwegian ferry line?
Stenaline actually operate the line between the New Haven Dieppe, I believe, actually.
New Haven Dieppe. So I'm gonna go for.
Are you giving us a clue here?
Nope.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of thinking it's actually a French or a Dutch side, possibly.
I'm going to go for a Scandinavian side. I'm going to say a Norwegian side.
No, none of those. It's. It actually looks very similar to an Everton shirt, actually, doesn't it?
It certainly can't be later than 1993.
But it's not an Everton shirt, and I'll tell you what it is.
Please do.
And this is what Phil has to say. Here's an odd one for you, he says.
No, really?
Who knew that Canada had a professional soccer league as far back as 1989? This is the home shirt of Victoria Vistas, which are from Victoria in British Columbia. The Vistas only existed for two seasons, 89 and 90, and this is the home shirt from those two seasons. And it's rather smart, I think.
Well,
I think it is
right.
Too, Phil. Yeah. They played their home games at the Royal Victoria Park, which has a current capacity of 3,800. Poutine chomping great white northerners. Anyone care to guess what poutine is?
Poutine is an Irish potato.
No, poutine.
Don't know.
Russian president?
No, it's chips topped with cheese curd and chicken or beef gravy.
Blech.
There you go. And with such a short history, there's not a lot to say about the side. They finished 10th in 89 and 4th in 1990 before the club folded. I'll give you a sort of.
How did they match? In that case, how on earth did they manage to get Stenaline as a sponsor? I mean, what happened there then?
I don't know.
Come on,
Phil,
we need to know.
Research. Yes, this is the important questions. Never mind Andoni's red card. How did a team that only existed for 2 years manage to get a major international ferry company?
Oh, no, it's a very good.
You nearly got the gag out there, but well done. Carry on.
Anyway, I'll give you a sort of Brighton link. Simon Keith was born in Lewis in May 1965. He moved to Canada as a youngster and began his career as a striker with the Vistas before moving to Winnipeg Fury and then Cleveland Crunch. He has an interesting claim to fame. He's the first person to have played professional sports after undergoing a heart transplant. He was diagnosed with myocarditis in 1984 and went under surgery in 1986. He now runs the Simon Keith Foundation, which is a charity helping finance youngsters who have undergone heart transplant surgery and raising awareness of the importance of registering for organ donation.
Weird. Sorry, I mean brilliant, but weird.
You're still getting over the Stenaline thing, aren't you?
Well, there's a Stenaline thing. I can actually see all those zigzags. What do you call? What are they called? Victoria what?
They are the Victoria Vistas.
Victoria Vistas. That's a whole load of V's on the shirt, isn't it? All those zigzags.
Yeah.
So,
Victoria's a wonderful place. It's great.
Oh, yes. Yes, you've been to Canada, haven't you, Aidan?
Yeah.
But it's... I wish you'd told us.
And Canada is... the Victoria is very, very anglicised, though. It's,
well, with a name like Victoria, you'd assume that was the case.
I mean, you know, they've got red double-decker buses, red phone boxes.
So it's a bit like Gibraltar.
It's very similar to that, yeah.
Except so not being quite stuffed over by the government.
Yeah, but it's a wonderful place.
Right, okay. I'm going to have to be in the minority in this studio and say that shirt is revolting. And if you think it's that lovely... by all means, wear it.
I would.
But just make sure you're on the other side of the pub from me.
You know, if the Albion decides to go back to a blue shirt, I wouldn't be upset with that.
I would.
Me neither.
Good grief.
No.
What is wrong with you two? Okay, I mean, Phil's going to put this up on Facebook. Thank you very much indeed for that, Phil, by the way. You can see shirts a lot nicer than that, 100,000 of them are not nicer than that, on his website, oldfootballshirts.com. Yeah, thanks for that. And the briefest of stories for a team that existed for 2 years and still managed to get a major international ferry sponsor. Brilliant.
Well, I mean, I'm guessing that Stena Line must have run the link between Vancouver and Victoria. Which
even
is
so.
Or done the whale watching or something like that.
Well, I'll tell you what, shall I set up a studio team and see if I can get Townsend Torreson to sponsor us?
Well, they did need to sponsor the
album. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, we've been asking this week about your football superstitions. I mean, look, there's some very, very strange ones out there.
Can I just say the reason we're doing this is we're recording this on Friday the 13th. I think that's the only reason you actually sort of suggested that, wasn't it?
Yes.
Frankly, yeah. I mean, this show goes out on Saturday the 14th, but, you know, don't let that get in the way of a good story.
But absolutely. But, I mean, like, have you got any, like, superstitions, Justin?
I tend to try and develop them, and then they very quickly disappear when we lose.
Give me a for instance.
I used to listen to a song, or various songs. There's been quite a few on my way up to the Amex.
Was one of them Superstition by Stevie Wonder, by any chance?
No, but that would be fitting, wouldn't it?
It would be great.
And I do like that song.
It's a great song.
Yeah.
So which songs have you sort of put into your armoury that's made us lose?
Oh, there's been so many.
Are we talking guilty pleasures here, or are we talking sort of like anthems?
What was
or?
The last one that you ditched? Before the Southampton game.
It was actually in the Championship season,
okay,
that we came very close. And there was kind of big rock songs. There was a song by who was it? Faith No More, because they're one of my
bands.
Very epic choice. And it was, I'm just trying to remember which one. It was kind of like a superhero themed one. And it was very kind
grief.
Of winding myself up, getting very kind of, we're gonna do it, we're gonna do it. And it was
very sweary that we can't play it on the show.
No, it's not. No.
Okay. I mean, I used to listen to Soulfly before I used to play, so it was, yeah, that used to get me in the mood. But it was
okay. But we're not talking about getting in the mood. We're talking about superstitions
yeah.
here. So,
but yeah, I've got superstitions.
Go on, do tell.
Well, I always have to.
You have to get drunk first.
No, not necessarily. I always have to have 2 cups of coffee out of my Brighton mug, which is very nearly deceased.
What do you mean? As in faded, or
it's definitely very faded, and it's also very cracked. And. But I'm holding on.
Career.
Yeah, I cracked a long time ago.
There we go. Yeah, okay.
But it's there's that. I mean, I always used.
So what happens when the mug does crack? Then what happens when it goes? It dissipates. I mean, yeah. Is it like breaking a mirror?
Possibly is. Yeah.
Okay.
But I used to, if I wore a shirt and we won, I used to wear that shirt to every game until we lost.
Okay, so we're talking about sort of like the retention of the clothes, like, you know, the same grotty underpants and the same socks.
No, just the shirt.
Just the shirt, okay. And how long did this superstition last? How long was it good for? About the next game?
Well, until and I wore that shirt and I only washed it once we'd lost, and then I'd wear a different shirt and then I'd
You wouldn't wash it?
No.
Oh,
no, I would. No, you can't wash the victory out of the shirt. That's insane, man.
Oh,
insane.
Dear.
God,
oh dear!
So the
more we win, the more people are going to stand away from you. Frankly,
well, yeah, I have.
You
done
have
that
this
one
sort of like
ready
brick sort of fuzzy, buzzy fly thing around you.
Well, you're only wearing it for like a couple of hours on a Saturday afternoon.
What I tend to find is actually, if I actually discuss the superstition, is not good form.
Yeah.
So I have these certain ones. They're not rituals or anything like that. I mean, I don't have a favourite shirt or underpants or anything like that. I don't have a lucky anything. It's kind of more of an OCD sort of thing of going through the same turnstile. Getting frisked by the same bloke.
Yeah, I always go for the same guy.
Same bloke.
He's got gentle hands.
Absolutely. He's lovely, my one. He's lovely. And going in the same turnstile. Apart from that, not really.
Well, we've had that one as well. Simon Maskell, once of his parish. Same turnstile when I enter the Amex after going through security.
But the point I would say about it is the superstition as such doesn't work. It's just that I know that if I do go through another turnstile, it guarantees defeat. But then if I try it, in the next home game, it's all bets are off anyway. It doesn't work.
I can't buy a program anymore because every time I buy a program, we lose.
I can't drive us in a minibus.
This is true. We did ban you from that.
You did, yes. Yeah.
But we've had a few others in.
Shannon's a good moneymaker for me.
Yeah. But Mako McAleese, who's actually a Hibs fan.
He is.
And he says, avoid watching my team playing someone that's any good.
Yeah, okay, a superstition. I mean, that doesn't really fall under superstitions, but...
Karen Hasted, competition winner.
She did. She received her book this week. Whether she's eaten it yet, I'm not sure, but...
But she used to wash... She said, I used to wash my scarf after every defeat. Eventually decided it would wear out rather quickly.
Well, yeah, quite. And she'd run out of washing powder and then destroy the environment. Yeah.
Brian Gilbert, he had a lucky blue Seagulls polo shirt that he wore for every match for the first couple of seasons at the Amex. Stopped wearing it after Hoopia joined us. Wonder why.
Well, I think all superstitions go out the window when Hoopia joined us.
And, Tom Nutley never sits down in the seat until a referee blows his whistle.
See, that's an interesting one. It's not so much a superstition as a ritual. Yeah. And I think there's a fine line between the two, isn't there? You said yourself, I don't know if it's a superstition or if it's part of your ritual. What happens if you don't have your coffee? You know, my point would be is you insist on having it, but it's actually part of your day. I mean,
it has to be two, though. It has to be two cups.
No, I get that bit.
It's one and a half or two.
But it's still a ritual.
Yeah.
But it's not as though the Ravens are going to disappear from the tower.
Yes, it is.
It's that bad, is it?
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Okay. So, I think it's something we'll have to expand on for the next show. Is it's not so much superstitions, but what are your rituals? Yeah.
But Richard Vaughan, famous Richard Vaughan.
He saved the Albion on his own.
Yeah. He says, I don't have any. Whatever I do, Argyle are always rubbish. He didn't use that word, but if you go to our Facebook
page. Okay, fine, yeah. Is he
Simon,
from Norwich?
Simon Dainsky, get drunk before every game. Yeah, thank
you. Well, that's you, frankly.
Yeah. No, I don't. I'm not drinking anymore.
So yours is playing to particular tunes. This is the ridiculous thing. I mean, there's so many sort of things out there. Your rituals, you know, putting your left shoe, sock, well, putting your socks on before your shoes, obviously. There's just so many sort of bits and pieces. I like to think I've dissipated all of them, but you just can't get rid of some, can you?
No. Talking about the occult, do either of you get the a pre-goal premonition where
no
where and it's never us scoring, but the opposition will get a corner or they get a throw or they get it into a certain position. And you just get this feeling, and it just feels you go, they're going to score.
Usually it's if a winger like just runs through the entire team, we just know that no one's going to stop him.
I get it with some free kicks and corners, and it's not with everyone at all against us, but I just get this overwhelming...
How accurate is this premonition? It's rubbish, isn't it?
Do you know what? When it happens, you think, I'm some sort of a special kind of spiritual sort of
spiritual
shaman here, yeah. And I've got the power. But I suppose if I were to write down the amount of times I get it, and then it would obviously be nonsense. But
I think you'd drive yourself around the twist as well, wouldn't you? Okay.
Well, one ritual or superstition or whatever, which will have to change in the future at the Amex is that of running to the particular vendor and paying with a crisp £20 note for your beverage of choice.
Well, isn't it funny, isn't it? I mean, sort of 10 years ago, we were skint, and now we're cashless.
Wow.
Thanks, mate.
How long have you been working on that?
That was actually one I nicked from a tiller earlier today, actually. So,
good credit.
Yeah, I mean, it was the old thing of when Martin Perry and Ken Brown and Dick Knight were saying, oh, we're going to make this a cashless stadium. Martin Perry sort of mused while we were still up with Dean. Well, I think we've got that now already. It was kind of the pie in the sky thing. Personally, I do prefer the choice.
I'm not a big fan of it personally,
but if it were, because the vast majority of people will pay by card, absolutely, and contactless, absolutely, and no one, I think you're actually going beyond your order, exceeding your order if you actually spend more than £30, so it is going to be contactless every time. But sometimes your card hasn't come through or it's playing up or whatever it might be and you need some folding. I get the point as to it is a faster transaction, but I also think there should be at least one kiosk.
It's because they can't be bothered to go to the bank, is what it is.
Knowing a bit about that, the cost of processing cash is getting enormous. So that would be the time you pay your staff to cash the tills up. That would be the money you pay to companies like G4S to come and collect the cash. That would be the kind of security systems you have in place for transporting cash to till to safe. All of those things staff are spending their time on. And I think... I think we are going to a cashless society, and I think it's part of the kind of club's ethos to be. They see these trends, they see these patterns, and they want to be leading on it. So I'm kind of the opposite view to you two. I think it's a good thing. And kind of young whippersnappers like me who love the contactless. I want those queues to be going fast. Bang, bang, drink. Bang, 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 bang.
Yeah, but you
pay.
The queues can go
I do
fast
apologise for anyone
that's, cash, though,
sorry, for anyone who is actually listening on their headphones, I do apologise for the fact you've now just been had your head thumped. That was just Justin banging the table, which incidentally is banned in this studio, but he's done it anyway. yeah, it's not a young whippersnapper thing. It is quite right. This should be done. I think that the fast, as probably just said, the fast thing is get the beer served quicker. It's not necessarily taking the money. They too many of them. God, it sounds so critical. Too many of them do have that kind of thumb up the bum and brain in neutral look about them. But having said that, I know that also a lot of them do get a lot of grief. And being behind those kiosks, and maybe you'll know about this, Justin, being behind those kiosks can be a frightening place, especially when you've got aggressive people.
Definitely. I've seen a number of kind of, fans who just don't understand that those staff are potentially they're casual workers, they're students new to the city, they're brought in with very kind of little training, rolled straight out. And you always see at the Amex that there's a high turnover of staff, and kind of August time, September, sometimes the shortages because the students aren't back, and then you have this period we're just coming up to, which will probably be the next month.
Time in it, yeah.
All these new students, they're working there, they don't really know what they're doing, and that's when you see the anger and you see the comments and the huffs and puffs. And sometimes you see their little faces and you think, come on, guys, give them a break.
I mean, the first game of the season is always difficult because most of the time it's a lot, like you said, they are very transient.
Stuck around during the summer, but a lot of them aren't here.
But quite often it's their first day on the job. They're not quite sure what they're doing, it does take time to get used to it. Usually by the time we're into September, October, that's all settled down.
Well, not necessarily, because that's the point that Justin's making is the new students come in, and a lot of them will be looking for some work anyway, and so there is the new intake, and they're starting coming in during this month. You know, the big sort of like student drop off in the first years, the freshers, that kind of thing. Some have been looking for work, and it's the first time they've been out in the big wide world. It's a frightening experience for them, for someone who has a sense of entitlement that says, I demand my beer in 4 seconds and I demand it now. And by the way, you're just a waste on the taxpayers, blah, blah, blah. And they get really shouty and angry. I think it's unfair on you. It's unfair on them. So all I'd ever say to the Albion fans that do want to start screaming, just, you know, that could be you behind those tills. Could you do any better? If you can, great. Volunteer, go behind there.
I mean, it's great. I mean,
well, not volunteer. You'll get paid, obviously.
But absolutely. But will they get by, not by cash?
yeah.
But it is. I mean, I assume they
get the proper training. One assumes they get... One, how to pour a pint, how to serve a pint, how to operate the till, that kind of thing.
That's another story for another day. I mean, they will get better. I mean, the story is about the stadium going cashless.
But it's all part of the big thing, isn't it? It's great to speed up by transaction, absolutely. But it's also good to speed up by service as well.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's nice to have the choice. And I think that, I mean, that, for instance, the Harvey's wall in WSU.
Brilliant.
You know, that's cash only, and, you know, that moves incredibly quickly.
Well, that seeks to presume then that they're going to be able to do contactless.
Yeah.
Well, quite. It's either that or the wall isn't going to be there.
Yeah, okay.
And that's a kind of regressive step.
Okay, but, I mean, we have come a long way, and, like, we are moving towards a cashless society, as Justin says there. But, I mean, 10 years ago, where were we then? We were still in League One. Russell Slade was in charge.
Was he?
Yep. Yeah. It was 10 years ago. We were this weekend. We were away at Carlisle in League One. We won 2-0. Two goals from...
Glenn Murray.
No.
No idea.
Nicky Forster.
I remember him.
So, I mean, bearing in mind, 10 years in football terms isn't actually that long as... I mean, if you look at... But looking at the team we put out that day, I mean...
Go on, what was
it? It's amazing where, in 10 years' time, how... Only one of them, I think, is still playing. Oh, no, two of them.
Well, playing. Oh, OK. Who is it?
Well, in goal, they was...
John Sullivan.
Michel Kuipers.
Yeah.
Tommy Elphick. Adam Elab. James Tunnicliffe.
These guys are still playing.
Adam Virgo.
Not.
Gary Dicker. Aaron still Davis. Playing. Remember Aaron Davis?
No.
Andrew Crofts. Well, he's
he's in our first team squad.
He is. He's one of the 25, and he's younger than Glenn Murray.
But I've worked out that him being in the squad is because we have to. He has to. If you've got players that are registered to play in any of the competitions, or over a certain age, they have to be listed on that thing.
So having a squad of 24 is not good enough. Is that what you're saying?
Basically, yeah. It's not. Okay. It's not that. Basically, you have to be noted on there. Anyway, so Elliot Bennett as well.
Still playing.
Nicky Forster.
Not playing.
Your favourite.
Who?
Liam Dickinson.
Well, I don't know why I said that. I'm neither here nor there with that bloke.
And then on the bench that day, the ghost.
Graham Smith.
Yeah. Jake Wright, Alan Navarro, Kevin McLeod.
Yeah. So half that team.
Matt Thornhill, Craig Davis and Gary Hart.
Good God.
But that was 10 years ago. That's...
Well, like I say, to be fair, half that team is still playing. I mean, you said one or two and it's not. It's actually half that team is still playing.
Well, Tommy Elphick is, Gary Dicker is, Andrew Crofts is.
Elab's still playing, he hasn't retired yet.
Elab's is, yeah.
Yeah.
Stevenage now, isn't he?
Oh, I can't remember where he is. I just remember, I think last season he passed 500 first team appearances in the league. So, no, it's. But we always knew that was going to be the case. It was us and a lot of people. The whole notion was always going to be build it and they will come. There are a lot of naysayers. You go to North Stand chat, you'd have found some real miserable people there. We won't get more than 14,000. Because they were looking at a club that was in the third division. Which is why we actually sought to get a 22,000-seater stadium. Because we looked to get a 31,000-seater stadium. While we're in the third division, on crowds of 7,500, we'd have been laughed out of the council. Quite rightly, probably. But it was actually, we knew it was build it and we will come. So the trajectory we've been on has been predicted.
Yeah.
But it's still incredible.
But I mean,
then that's when you get to realise the difference between a third division club and a Premier League club. The leap that you have to make. It took us 6 years to make that leap from the Championship.
Mm. But I mean, that was the year that Gus came in that season. So that was 10 years ago. So,
good grief.
So
the architect of where we are now, I think.
We very nearly got relegated out of League One that season. So it was...
Gus did steady the ship. He steadied the ship quicker than Houghton did in his time. Mm. And in fact, that second half of the season, we actually played some pretty sexy football. But, so the following season, that's where you could see that we really started on liftoff. Yeah.
But interestingly, Andrew Crofts did actually score in the last game we won against Burnley.
And how long ago was that?
That was on August the 24th, 2013.
Okay.
And can you give me another stat from that game, which is relevant?
We won.
We did win, 2-0. Leo Joe with the other goal.
Okay, the other stat that was... I've no idea.
We have mentioned this on the show before, which is why
Justin,
I'm
what's he talking about? I don't know. He goes on this flight of fancy.
Somebody made their debut.
I'm not having this dead air, mate.
Solly March.
Oh, thank you.
There we go.
Did you know that,
no,
Justin?
No,
yeah.
No.
No.
Also, Kemi Agustin was playing, so there you go. Okay, so we
don't think rehearse this show, wouldn't we?
But anyway, we've had an international break. We've had most of the players return, as I said in the intro there. There is still this issue with Leandro Trossard. How much of a worry is that?
Not massively so. He is good. He is still, for me, a little bit lightweight. He's very good. But having said that, I think that we'll have enough in the tank that we can do this. So anyone who's moaned about the fact that we've offloaded Andoni and Lacardia, who, let's face it, well, one of them was a little bit of a paperweight. When I say a little bit, I mean a lot.
I'm a little worried about it. I think he's been a bit of a revelation. He's kind of worked straight out of the box, where some players we kind of sign... well, we're still waiting for some players to sort of start playing well, but who's going to provide us with that creativity, that little bit of Premier League standard intelligence we need in the attacking third would be the question I would ask.
So, if we're assuming that we're going to have Murray leading the line and two players behind him, which in previous matches has been Mopai and Trossard, I don't think it's a totally unrealistic thing that Gross would play. He's nothing like as mobile, obviously, but. If you're talking about the quality that can deliver into into Murray, then Gross is your man. Don't get me wrong, I have criticised him, and I'm still not convinced that Gross fits into a Graham Potter style. In which case, you then sort of look at Aaron Connolly, who Graham Potter, I'm told, having been at the club, you know, talking to the doing the women's press conference today, but talking to other people, Graham Potter is very, very impressed with Aaron Connolly and really wants to see him progress. And so, don't be surprised. I don't know if Connolly starts.
Yeah, he assisted a goal in one of the recent Republic under 21 games,
and his
wing play was quite astounding. I didn't realise he could do that sort of stuff on the wing. I had him down as sort of a penalty box area sort of specialist number nine. Yeah. But that
Ruddy Mail, I can only really compare that to something that Raheem Sterling's been doing recently. That low point of gravity where you just manage somehow to get in.
Well, he's not that tall, is he?
No, he's not. No.
So yeah, he's. I'm just wondering if he's going to be one of those sort of tough players. Those kind of, you could say, low centre of gravity. Well, I've never actually. I use that phrase. I've no idea what that means, because your centre of gravity is, well, you're just standing still. Your centre of gravity really is going to be the centre. I don't know what it means. But
Mopay is like that as well, isn't he?
He's
stocky.
Yes, he is.
And,
yeah.
Or Mopay, as you like to call him. Yeah. He's stocky. He's quick. Mm-hmm. And he scores goals. So they could be two very similar players.
Absolutely. So I think that probably Connolly is going to be more of a ready-made replacement for Trossard. But don't be surprised if it's Gross that starts.
I very much expect Pascal to be in the team tomorrow.
Instead of Connolly.
I think Connolly's not quite ready to start yet. But, I mean, I think he will be. He's ready to make an impact. I mean, anyone who's seen his showreel will see that he's very capable of scoring lots of different types of goals as well. Yeah. So he's not just a certain kind of striker. He can do a little bit of everything. But obviously he's very young.
Can Trossard, so can Mopay, which kind of makes me think that that's why he's more of a ready-made replacement. So,
but I mean, do we think we're going to see Shane Duffy return to the starting lineup this weekend?
Oh, that's a toughie. Toughie for Duffy. I don't know. I didn't see Webster sort of his performance against City too much. He looked comfortable, but
yeah, I'd say yes. I think you've got to fight fire with fire. So with Woods and Barnes sort of dishing it out,
you've got to have a bit of a mountain. You've got to have a bit of a dump truck at the back, haven't you?
I anticipate Burnley. Last season they looked like one of the best organised teams I saw come to the Amex in a defensive sense.
Yeah.
And they're just going to lob the ball up. That tends to be one of the big ways they break. And generally, Woods or Barnes will get it and then do something very good with it. So I think we need Duffy there. I don't think his lack of pace or his that you could potentially criticise him for. The other thing would be top-level Premier League passing he can't do, but I think he could take care of Woods and Barnes.
Well, let's talk about that then. So our League One winning forward line is going to be on the pitch tomorrow.
Yep.
With Woods, Barnes and Murray.
It's Wood, please, it's Wood. There's only one of him.
Yeah, true, okay.
All the right. BMW lineup, isn't it? Murray, Barnes and Wood.
Are you surprised to see that Ashley Barnes has been such a success at this level and over a long period of time?
No, not at all. He always had it in him. I think he's just what I always thought about Ashley Barnes. He does kind of a lot of things fairly well, and some things quite well. But he's sort of an all round forward, and it's difficult to classify him. I think Poyet used to have him. He didn't really pay him centrally that much, and I think we missed out on maybe seeing the best of him. But he can do. He's kind of got it all, but not. He doesn't have top-level pace. He doesn't have top-level strength. But he can do everything to an extent. And that makes him a kind of quite a tricky player to come up against, because you can't categorise him as you would, say, a Glenn Murray. So you can say, right, lads, Glenn Murray's, or, you know, if you're Dice, you say, right, lads. Sorry, forgive listeners.
It's like there was a Dalek in the room.
He's got no pace. This is what he does. With Ashley Barnes, I think it's tough to defend against him. He can also show real moments of fantastic skill.
Yeah.
His ball control is brilliant. He knows how to volley a ball. So no surprise at all.
But the point about Ashley Barnes is that he's come to terms with his own limitations, and he plays to them. He is a kind of 7 out of 10 on so many aspects of the play. Mm. There isn't, I don't think it's particularly a 10 out, apart from nastiness, there isn't really a 10 out of 10 within him. It's 7 out of 10. And that in itself, and finding somewhere like Burnley, I think is actually finding kind of square pegs in square holes. And that is such an important part of actually a team working together well. You can have a brilliant striker, but if they're at the wrong club or playing under the wrong manager, it's all going to turn to custard.
But, I mean, two of his standout moments in the Brighton shirt came against Burnley, though. Well, two red cards.
Well, that's not quite the point, though, is it? So, so are we surprised with this?
Oh, you're going to trip the ref. You're one for me.
Well, that wasn't against Burnley. That was Bolton.
Oh,
but,
it was Bolton.
Yeah.
Same neck of the woods.
But, no, are we surprised? No, not really. He has grown into each role that he's been asked to do. Is he going to ever get an England call-up? Of course not. But all the while, he is a...
Austria missing out.
Well, I think it might have been that his granny was on holiday, or his granny's parents were on holiday.
I think he played in a competitive game for the under-21s, though. So...
No, it was the under-20s, and it was... Yeah, that doesn't... I don't think that specifically counts these days. He's not going to be an England international. He's not going to be an Austrian international, because let's face it, Austria would have actually picked him by now. So, you know, they're not that worried about that. The point, the question you asked was, are we surprised? The answer, really no.
No, I don't, I'm not that surprised at all either. But, I mean, the thing that still surprises me about him was that just how incredibly Marmite he was here. Because I always personally loved him. In fact, I love anyone who puts on a blue and white shirt. That's just part of the DNA. But
including Andoni?
Yeah, including Andoni, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it? The thing that makes him Marmite, and the modern day version of that, the up to date version of that, it probably is Florin Andoni, where you know he's got skill, you know he's got pace, you know he can actually do. Let's face it, you know, him trolling Palace last season was brilliant, and then he goes and does that, and that's what you've got now, what you have with Barnes. He'll do something brilliant, whack in 20 goals, and then go and beat the ref up. You can't have it both ways. So
is he still the leading scorer at the Amex? For Brighton,
who?
Ashley Barnes.
No,
it must be Glenn.
Oh,
he's
Glenn.
Yeah.
Even Ajoa overtook him. So, but yeah, he did hold that record for, you know, in the first 4 or 5 seasons. Yeah.
Okay. Well, on that note, that is actually all we've got time for.
Really?
Amazingly, yeah. That's, I know. Crazy, isn't it? So, yeah. Thank you to Justin Brentnell. Thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to Hope Powell and
to Megan Connolly, who thinks this city is anything goes.
On Plymouth Rock, if today any shock they should try to stem, instead of landing on Plymouth Rock, Plymouth Rock would land on them. In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was a look on to something shocking, but now God knows anything goes. Good offers to who once knew better words, now only used for letter words, writing prose. Anything goes. If driving fast cars you like, if low bars you like, if old hymns you like, if bare limbs you like, if Mae West you like, or me undressed you like, why nobody will oppose. When every night the set that's smart is intruding at nudist parties in studio, anything goes. When the Mrs. Ned McLean, God bless her, can get Russian red to yes, then I suppose anything goes. When Rockefeller still can hoard enough money to let Max Gordon produce his show, anything goes. The world has gone mad today, and good's bad today, and black's white today, and day's night today, and that gent today you gave a cent today once had several chateaus. When folks who still can ride in jitneys find out Vanderbilts and Whitneys lack baby clothes, anything goes. When Sam goes Bowen can with great conviction instruct Anna stand in diction. Let Anna show anything goes. When you hear that lady mental standing up, now does a handspring landing up on her toes. Anything goes. Just think of those shocks you got, and those knocks you got, and those blues you got from those news you got, and those pains you got, and any pains you got from those little radios. So Mrs. R, with all her trim, and can broadcast a bed from Simmons, cause Frank will know anything goes.